I'm Abigail Galvan. Welcome to EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. Violence on the streets as a pro-life journalist is attacked on camera. And the man shooting the video? Her own husband. Tonight, both join us on Pro-Life Weekly to discuss what happened, how she is doing, and what went through his mind at the time of the attack.
Nicole said a whole bunch of outrageous things, including that she was intimidating. I've met Livia. She is the furthest thing from intimidating.
A woman in the United Kingdom has been fined tens of thousands of dollars just for standing silently outside an abortion clinic. We look at the case and how this was allowed to happen.
Yeah, I'm excited to see the fruits of that down the road.
Well done, good and faithful servant. As a prominent pro-life bishop is set to retire, we look at his inspiring commitment to the unborn and the hope he sees for the future.
Não é essa a questão.
We begin with shocking scenes out of New York, where a pro-life journalist is attacked on the street while interviewing a woman about her view on Planned Parenthood. That journalist, who is Catholic, is Savannah Craven Entau. She works with Live Action and conducts these kinds of interviews regularly, discussing people's perspectives on abortion and providing a pro-life perspective. Savannah was talking about the financials of Planned Parenthood for a segment entitled, What Does Planned Parenthood Do? Perception versus Reality. After a few minutes of discussion, the woman became violent and punched Savannah in the face, then walked away. Savannah was taken to the ER where she received stitches, and the police were notified about the attacker. Joining me now to discuss the attack and what led to it is the journalist herself, Savannah Craven Entau, and her husband, Henry Entau, the videographer of the interview. Savannah and Henry, thank you so much for joining us. First, Savannah, how are you doing?
I'm doing really well. Thanks to prayer and the overwhelming amount of support that I've had online, and of course, just my husband always being by my side. It's been a lot, mentally and physically, of course, but, you know, it's nothing compared to what's happening to over 1,000 babies every day.
Wow. And Henry, can you tell us how the attack happened from your point of view?
Yes. So thank you for having us here. And I was recording and, it was all very unfortunate because I never expected her to lay a hand on her, because she was very friendly. She was the one who came up to us and started a conversation. So it was very shocking. And I didn't expect that to happen while they were having a conversation. You know, it's just a conversation. If she didn't agree with her views, she could have walked away, but she decided to choose violence.
Oh, and have you heard of any updates on the attacker?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yes, so the detectives are working on the case. She has been identified and she has a warrant out for her. They haven't, got her yet. So hopefully very soon.
And Savannah, you are a journalist with Live Action, conducting interviews like this regularly. Have you seen responses like this before?
Well, I'm used to people getting very agitated once I question their extreme views on abortion, or even just ask them simple questions to clarify their stance. I've had grown men spit at me, say horrible things that they want to happen to me, but I've never had anyone assault me like that. And if you watch the entire clip, which is on Live Action's YouTube, I encourage everyone to go watch the full unedited footage. You'll see that there was no obvious buildup to this woman's attack. It was like a light switch went off.
That's very disturbing to watch. And Savannah, like, just based on your experience, what would you say is the best way to share the pro-life perspective?
Absolutely. Well, getting out there on the streets and in real life and having conversations. I think the biggest issue nowadays is that people aren't forced to have conversations because we're so used to just having these keyboard wars online where people feel comfortable saying whatever they want. And then when they're actually questioned in real life, they're not able to handle it. This woman decided to do what a keyboard warrior says that they'll do online, and that's actually assault me.
And does an event like this deter you from continuing interviews like this one?
Absolutely not. I've already been back out there on the street, this time as Henry, not the cameraman, but just being my bodyguard. And I'll be having more bodyguards as I go out to these crazy leftist and pro-abortion rallies because we have to continue to share the truth.
Indeed. And we are in the season of Lent. Like, do you guys have a message of mercy for Brianna or anyone else who might hold her views?
Yes, I mean, I'm just praying for everyone who's been hurt by abortion. Abortion is violence, therefore it breeds violence. And there's a lot of hurt that's going on with a lot of women across the world because of what abortion does. We're told it's a woman's right, that it should be empowering to just keep it inside because it's just a simple procedure. But then women are left feeling guilty, they're left feeling broken and like something is missing because abortion is ripping away your own self, basically. A part of you, a unique creation by God. And you think about any other animal on the world that in the world that would rip their baby out of their womb. It just doesn't happen.
And Savannah, earlier you mentioned keyboard warriors saying these things, but then actually acting upon them. Have you been noticing an increase of violence out in the streets?
Definitely. Ever since the fall of Roe v. Wade, we've seen more and more violence on pro-life activists, people who are doing even less things that I do, just praying outside of an abortion facility, just praying for the women that are walking in, not even making direct contact with people. It's insane. But this is what happens when you promote a culture of death, when your whole existence revolves around ending innocent lives, is that evil is going to come out and the devil loves it. He loves abortion. He loves this anger. He loves this violence. And if people don't turn to God, it's just going to continue.
And to your knowledge, has anyone that you've interviewed ever had an abortion?
Yes, many, many women that I've interviewed have had an abortion. They've been open with me about it. And one thing that I always like to share is that a lot of women in the pro-life movement are post-abortive, and they've unfortunately had to go through that to realize what abortion really was and now speaking out against it. I've had so many messages over this past week of women messaging me and saying, I had an abortion 52 years ago, and I still think about what my baby could have been. This is not a 15-minute procedure, and then you never think about it. It's not like ripping off a Band-Aid. It's not like taking a Tylenol. This is a human life that is being forever destroyed, and we're not getting them back. We can't get babies back from abortion, and we see how it affects women long term.
Yeah, and finally, to close, a question for you both. What are signs of hope that you see?
Yes, you want to take this one?
Yes, I don't think this event is going to, whatever incident happened is going to stop us from going out there and spreading the word, because it's just going to make us stronger. It's just that we need security with us, and we just have to keep doing this work, because this is, if we're going to stop now, they're going to feel, they weakened us, and we are not able to do anything about it. But that's not the case. This just has made us stronger and has motivated us to go out there and spread out the word even more. But now we have to be very smart about it and save, because these people are obviously very violent. And she has a lot of pain inside her. I could see that later, when I sat down and watched the video. There was a lot of pain inside her. And when these people are not able to logically justify their statements, all they can do is violence. So,
Yeah, I actually did see that too when I was watching the interview. It was hard to watch, but you could tell there was pain behind a lot of those answers. Do you guys have any final closing thoughts for our audience before we let you go?
absolutely. If you'd like to help support us in this fight, we have a Give Send Go set up, givesendgo.com/Savannah Craven to help us continue to go out there and have security. And just following along, Her Patriot Voice is our YouTube channel, and we're going to continue going out. We already went out to a crazy anti-Trump rally and ran into a Planned Parenthood board member. So that video will be up very soon. And just continue to support, share the word, and pray.
Well, thank you both so much for joining us. And again, I'm so sorry for what happened. And just thank you for just the beautiful witness you have as a married couple working together.
Thank you
Thank
so
you.
much.
To hear more from Live Action and their foundress, Lila Rose, you can visit ondemand.ewtn.com for an exclusive early access to her podcast. Some disappointing news to share out of the UK. 64-year-old Livia Tosici Bolt now has to pay tens of thousands of dollars simply for standing silently near an abortion clinic. The Poole Magistrates Court on the south coast of England found Tosichi Bolt guilty of breaching a so-called buffer zone. They issued a conditional discharge and ordered to pay prosecution costs of 20,000 euros. That's about $26,000. It stems from an incident from last year where Tosichi Bolt was within a buffer zone, which criminalizes influencing people within 150 meters or about 500 feet of an abortion clinic in the UK. All she did was hold a sign that said, "Here to talk if you want," and only had consensual conversations with those passing by, according to her legal team. In the United Kingdom, a cardinal is calling on Catholics to raise their voices against a bill that would legalize assisted suicide. Cardinal Vincent Nichols, Archbishop of Westminster, wrote a pastoral letter read to Catholics at Mass this past weekend. In it, he criticized not only the bill, but also the parliament and its lack of due process regarding the measure. Specifically, he questioned why there hadn't been a royal commission or independent inquiry, saying, quote, "The bill itself is long and complex and was published just days before MPs voted on it, giving them inadequate time to consult or reflect upon it. The time for debate was minimal. The committee examining the bill took only 3 days of evidence, not all voices were heard, and it comprises an undue number of supporters of the bill. In short, this is no way to legislate on such an important and morally complex issue." To dive further into both the conviction and Livia Tosichi Bolt and assisted suicide in the UK, Dr. Callum Miller, a research fellow at the University of Oxford, joins us now to break it all down. Callum, thank you for being with us today. The judge that convicted Tosichi Bolt told the court that Tosichi Bolt lacks insight that her presence could have a detrimental effect on women attending the clinic, their associates, staff, and members of the public. This argument about protecting the mental health and well-being of those seeking and perpetuating abortion is one commonly made when discussing buffer zone laws. What would you say to that?
Yeah, I mean, the court said a whole bunch of outrageous things, including that she was intimidating. Now, you know, they've met Livia because they were the ones, you know, prosecuting her. I've met Livia. She is the furthest thing from intimidating, especially in this setting where she's really just offering consensual conversations, didn't even mention abortion on her side, didn't speak to anyone unless she was spoken to and so on. This is really quite outrageous. But when it comes to the mental health side of things, we actually have specific evidence. There have actually been studies on this topic. How is the mental health of women affected by people outside of abortion clinics? Well, those studies, there are two of them, they found is that even when there are protesters outside the abortion clinic, it actually has no significant lasting impact on the mental health of women who go for abortions. And so we can imagine that when there's not even a protest, but simply someone standing there silently with an offer to talk if somebody wants, this is, you know, way less than even a protest. And so we can only imagine that the impact on someone's mental health would be even less or might even be positive, given that many women, perhaps a quarter of women, are having abortions because they're forced to by somebody else. And so the mental health argument, you know, might sound good to begin with, but when you look at the actual evidence we have on this subject, it's really completely baseless from an evidential point of view.
And it's so important to follow the evidence. Now, the judge also stated that it was important to note this case is not about rights and wrongs of abortion, but about whether the defendant was in breach of the PSPO. How have public space protection orders changed the conversation around these issues?
Yeah, so these were orders that were brought in to, you know, prevent really sort of extremely antisocial behavior, people being loud and rowdy, you know, in the middle of the night, being intoxicated, keeping everyone up awake at 3 a.m. in the town center kind of thing. But what we've seen is that they've expanded massively, basically to give local councils, without any sort of parliamentary oversight at a national level, basically give those councils authority to prohibit anything they want, with very little oversight, very little respect for basic freedoms. And so, we can only imagine how these could be applied in future. If they think that it's okay to ban certain kinds of speech or even silent prayer or offers of support when it comes to abortion, you can imagine that they would have similar goals in mind when it comes to banning other sorts of protest, whether it's protest against wars in other countries, protest against laws that are being made, protests against corruption. option. Really, if you're going to say that we can use these public space protection orders to ban protest and even ban silent prayer and offers of consensual conversations, there's really no limit to how they can be used to ban all sorts of other perfectly legal speech or actions, or even just being there in certain public places.
And changing the subject a little bit, Cardinal Nichols has written a pastoral letter urging the faithful to call their MPs to vote against the assisted suicide bill being introduced. In addition to objecting to the bill in principle, Cardinal Nichols is making the argument that the bill is long and complex and that it has not been properly scrutinized or being given the adequate time to consult or reflect upon an issue that is literally a matter of life or death. Why is an issue of such magnitude being rushed, and is this a common occurrence?
It's quite uncommon, actually, and this has been a notable feature of the euthanasia legislation in the UK, that it has been so rushed. You know, they say that more time has been spent, far more time actually has been spent debating fox hunting in Parliament than debating the legalization through our National Health Service of state-assisted suicide and euthanasia. And so it really is extremely concerning, and we're hoping and praying that leads people who voted for the bill at the second reading to decide against it at the third reading. We need about 20 to 30 members of parliament to change their mind. In a parliament of 650, that's not a huge number. So we do have hope that this could still be defeated. And given how rushed this has been, given that they have accepted almost no amendments, given that they have dispensed with pretty much every safeguard and every suggestion for how to make this safer, we're hoping that members of parliament who did support it are now seeing that this is really done without any guardrails, without any security or safety for patients, without any real scrutiny in parliament, and that they will decide that actually, overall, this is a bad idea to go through when the final vote happens towards the end of April.
Well, Callum, thank you so much for joining us. We look forward to having you back.
Thank you.
An end of an era is coming to the Archdiocese of Kansas City in Kansas, as Pope Francis has accepted the resignation of Archbishop Joseph Naumann. Throughout his tenure, His Excellency has been an outspoken and dedicated voice for the unborn. For 3 years, he served as chair for the USCCB pro-life office, and in Kansas, he has fought tirelessly for the pro-life cause. In fact, his papal motto is Vitae Victoria Erit, life will be victorious. So committed he is to the lives of the unborn that last year he was given the Heroic Defender for Life Award by Kansans for Life. In an interview with Pro-Life Weekly last year, he spoke of the hope he had for the future of the pro-life movement.
This is going to be an issue that we're going to deal with for a long time. I think there's a new wave of pro-life leaders that are emerging. Old people like me, I think there's some really good leaders that are coming up within the church, but in the broader society and culture as well. And they're willing to take risk and bold risk and to confront the lies of the culture. And so yeah, I think the pro-life movement is going to continue to grow.
Replacing Archbishop Naumann will be His Excellency Sean McKnight, currently the Bishop of Jefferson City in Missouri. Coming up on Pro-Life Weekly, although it's punishable by fines and even prison time, abortion numbers are going up in Germany. We'll look at the numbers from the Western European country, what the church in Germany is doing about it, and possible changes to the laws that could be on the horizon.
Our parents and carers are deeply concerned about the fact that there is, you know, readily available some of the dangers that are inherent within social media spaces. And they worry about what their kids are accessing and how it's shaping and influencing the development of their child.
That was Catherine Garrett-Jones representing the Council of Catholic School Parents in New South Wales. The Australian state had its first public hearing on the impact of pornography on mental, emotional, and physical health. The Standing Committee on Social Issues held an inquiry evaluating the effectiveness of current education programs and restrictions on pornography access. That included the consideration of the relationship between harmful pornography use and respect and consent education. examining the production and distribution of pornography, including deepfake and AI-generated content, assessing the impact of violent and degrading pornography on children and young people, and evaluating the support available to parents and carers to educate children about pornography. The Council of Catholic School Parents is one of the 79 organizations or individuals that made a submission to the parliamentary committee. Dr. Deidre Little, who spoke on behalf of the Catholic Women's League during the hearing, had this to say about the committee and what her organization hopes to come away with.
They're starting to recognize it's a public health crisis, particularly for children. We're hoping that it will result in both the family orientation shifting to make it safer in the home, but also the regulatory bodies responding to put some pressure on internet providers to literally, you know, clean up their act.
Meanwhile, German investigators announced last week that they have dismantled Kidflix, a major platform on the dark web that distributed child sexual abuse images to almost 2 million users worldwide. 38 countries, including Australia, Canada, and the U.S., supported the investigation. According to Guido Limmer, deputy head of the Bavarian Criminal Police, shutting down Kidflix was, quote, one of the biggest blows against child pornography in recent years, if not ever, unquote. This comes after Germany's Legal Affairs Committee lowered the minimum sentence for child pornography offenses in 2024. There's concerning new data out of Germany as well. More than 100,000 abortions were performed in the Western European country in 2024. Its Federal Statistical Office reported 106,000 abortions last year, a 0.2% increase compared to 2023. That number is still above the level it was from 2014 to 2020, when reported abortion cases were between 99,000 and 101,000. Abortion is punishable by fines or even prison time in Germany, but permitted in the first 12 weeks of pregnancy if a mother undergoes state-sanctioned counseling. The country also has exceptions for rape, incest, and the life of the mother. In recent years, Germany's government has loosened restrictions by completely removing abortion from its penal code. The Catholic Church in Germany explicitly opposes this removal and has called for the abortion paragraph to be reinstated. Joining me now to discuss this data is A.C. Wimmer, EWTN News Editor of Europe and Asia. Thank you so much, A.C., for joining us. What role has the Church played in the defense of life in Germany? We know the Church has had its own controversies in the country.
It certainly has. And part of the controversy is the response, both in terms of supporting people who are trying to get help and seek help through Catholic channels, but also seek approval to get abortion. And how do you partially square that with what really is, at the end of the day, a very troubling development on the one hand? And then on the other hand, of course, a firm and clear stance with Catholic teaching still being taught and promulgated in a way to people who are trying to find out what it is about life that begins at conception and aren't told elsewhere.
And as we reported in Germany, abortion is still regulated under the criminal code, with some exceptions where it is considered illegal but not punishable, such as within the first 12 weeks of pregnancy after mandatory counseling. Is it possible that might change soon?
That's exactly right. Under discussion, the new government is just forming, is a so-called decriminalization of abortion. It's been pushed for by the hard left and left-wing politicians for a long time. And with the involvement of the Social Democratic Party, the Labour Party, we might see more push in that direction. The Christian Democrat Party, though, the one that's going to be running the government, are against it.
And in 2022, the ban on sharing information about abortion was lifted by the German parliament. Is that a factor in this report about the number of abortions in the country?
Yes, absolutely. Experts are in agreement that things have been changing, sadly. There seems to be a bit of a salami slice tactic, if you pardon the expression, pushing towards the sort of legalization by all means, and that could be part of the story.
Now, shifting a little bit, the takedown of the child porn network in Germany comes after German lawmakers voted to decriminalize possessing child pornography last year. How should we view these mixed signals?
Look, there's a lot on debate, and the outrage, the public outrage, is enormous. We're talking about a massive takedown, a huge network with international reach, you know, millions of users worldwide. The depravity and the criminal activism that you're seeing is something that has outraged people in the church as well. But at the same time, as you said, there is this legal, again, salami slice stuff going on that people are concerned with.
And AC, what can the global church be doing to support Catholics in Germany?
Everything starting with prayer to communicating with German Catholics, reaching out online or in person. It's really important. And speaking from personal experience, it's always refreshing as a Catholic from a German-speaking background to go elsewhere and see how normal it is just to be Catholic and stand up for life and other issues.
That's great. And finally, before we close, is there anything you'd like to share with our audience?
Well, just one thing I think that a lot of our audience will probably know, but when you speak to normal Catholics in Germany, they share the sentiment and the concerns, and it is often not communicated publicly, but it's there in the parishes, in the families, in the communities. Pray for them.
And we'll certainly do that. AC, thank you so much for being here with us and sharing your perspective.
Thank you so much.
Last month, state legislators in North Carolina introduced two bills aimed at crisis pregnancy centers. The first bill in the Senate aims to reroute millions of dollars in state funds from the pro-life clinics to other organizations. A second bill in the House would allow the state's attorney general to investigate deceptive practices, such as falsely advertising abortions. Both chambers have a Republican majority and will likely not advance the legislation. And we have good news to end on. Although the annual National March for Life was in January, state marches have been keeping the fight for life going. Maryland, Virginia, and California all held their state marches late March and early April, with hundreds of youth, families, and students showing up to fight for life in their state. What a beautiful witness to life. Colorado and Oregon are among the next states to hold their marches for life in the coming months. That does it for this edition of EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. Be sure to like and follow us on our social media channels. You can find us at EWTN Pro-Life on X, Facebook, and Instagram. And sign up for our newsletter, The Pro-Life Pulse, EWTN.com/pro-life. Remember, life is a gift. Your life is a gift. God bless.